The old laptop is miserable under Windows, but with a Linux machine, with a Linux drive in there, it's like, yeah.
Welcome to Mintcast, episode 317. Livestream information is at mintcast.org/livestream. We're in the Mintcast channel at IRC at irc.spotchat.org. And if you see something you'd like to hear about, tell us. Send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. Join us on MeWe, Facebook, post at the Mintcast subreddit, chat with us on Telegram, Discord, or post directly at mintcast.org. This is Leo, and with me today is Tony Hughes.
Hi, guys.
Joe.
Hello.
Josh.
Hello.
And special guest, Toyam Cox.
Hello.
We're recording live on Sunday, September 8th, 2019. First up in our wanderings, Toyam shaves a yak and gets to soldering. I blew up and recovered my Mint install. Tony's been editing audio and lugging, Josh has been playing with Windows Subsystem for Linux, and Joe finally gets that Note 10. Then, in our news, we cover the Linux Mint monthly news, XFAT and the kernel, iPhone and Android exploits, and the new Pinebook Pro. All right, and this week, or this fortnight, our bi-weekly wanderings will start with Toyam. So what have you been up to?
So, I've been yak shaving. I started by needing a calendar for my household because I need to be able to share, there's a doctor's appointment, this is the day the car is going to be there and whatever, and details, we're going out to see this thing this time. And I'm unusual in that I don't like using Google services if I can avoid it. So I don't want my calendar on Google Things. Another thing is I want to be able to use it from the command line interface because I live my life in the command line. And furthermore, I need to be able to open up my laptop in the middle of nowhere, add a note to the calendar, and just have it there, and when I get back to civilization, I can my household will get that change to my calendar. None of the other options on that exist do that. So last year, I wrote a front end for this. I figured out the CSS, HTML, JavaScript, yada yada. It was annoying, but I couldn't find a satisfactory backend. I could do WebSockets or whatever, but it was. Nothing seemed to click right. I investigated CalDAV, which was its own little thing, and no, just no. Recently, I heard about Wales, which is somewhat like Electron, which lets you use desktop technologies to web technologies to make a desktop app. Except that instead of Electrons using JavaScript on the back end, it uses Golang, which is much more fun to write, at least in my opinion. So I found out about Wales, and I tried it out. Your distribution's not supported. So I PR'd support for Wales to support Void Linux, and now it supports Void Linux. And now I'm working on getting Wales to work with my front-end language, which isn't vanilla JavaScript. It is Clojure script, because I don't like writing JavaScript. And here I am trying to get Wales to work with Clojure script, and the calendar still exists somewhere, but I'm far down the tree right now. Additionally, last week, I finally soldered parts onto a PCB I had designed with a team, and I now regret a lot of things, including picking very small parts. The smallest footprint on that PCB is a 0402, which means it's 0.4 millimeters by 0.2 millimeters. Magnifying glass and tweezers, and a very steady hand on the soldering iron. Very steady hand. I regret things.
Yeah, I can only imagine on that. So that's a little bit about what you did. So tell us a little bit about you. I know we're going to get to some of that in the interview section, but since we split the show, let's hear about you in this half.
All right. I apparently, when I was 3 years old, I was helping the computer technician walk through the steps on Mac OS, whatever it was at the time, CD burning, whatever. I don't know anything. This is secondhand information, but so I've been apparently tinkering with computers for a while. But when I was 9 or 10 years old, a guy next to me at a dinner table turned to me and said, "Hey, Toyum, do you want to learn C?" And I said, "Okay, I don't know anything." Then I finished the book and I got into coding and development and tinkering with little things, and it's been a lot of fun since then. And right now I would say that my hobby is the same as my work, writing software. It's the thing I love to do. If I had a day alone, I would sit in a cave and finish up some projects.
We're very alike in that way, I guess, because I like talking about or just bringing new people into the fold, and I teach for a living, so it kind of ends up, they intersect a lot.
Awesome.
Okay. Now, can you define yak shaving for the people that are unfamiliar? I know at least two of us had to look it up.
So, a particular gentleman who's among the computing gods needed to write a book. However, he was unable to find any book writing software that suited his fancy. So he spent 10 years and wrote book writing software in order to write his book on computer programming. That process of, hey, I need a thing, but I need this other thing to do it, is yak shaving. If you ever go, hey, I need to send a file to a friend. Oh, hold on. There are no good file sharing services that I like. Let's go find one, or let's go. You're beginning to shave the yak. If you end up writing an FTP implementation for your web app, you're getting pretty far. And if you start writing file system drivers, you've gone too far.
So getting distracted by all the things that you need to do to get what you want done.
All the way down the stack. Yeah. yeah. Endless distractions, endless fun.
That's it. I didn't know about this term, but yeah, I've partaken in this a lot.
There's a recent thread online about what's your current yak shaving depth, and people were down to like 9. Hey, I needed this thing, so I ended up writing an operating system.
That sounds like our group, yep. All right, well, I guess I'll get into my part. So this past couple of weeks, this happened a couple days ago, actually, because I've been trying to play some games, and with the recent Padoka stable, I think that's how you say that. There's a PPA out there for a more recent, more modern version of Mesa so that you can get DXVK and Vulkan running properly on your system. Padoka has a stable PPA that you can use in Linux Mint and Ubuntu that will get you that newer driver. Well, it turns out that stable driver isn't quite up to performance par, so I had to kill it. And at the beginning, I just decided to disable the PPA, but I thought, well, maybe that's not going to work too well. I wonder if that driver's still going to remain, and it might cause me issues. So I wanted to swap over to the Oibof. I think that's – everybody has a name that I can't pronounce. So this Oibof PPA has a I guess the bleeding edge Git repository version of Mesa and other tooling. So they had recommended using PPA purge to get rid of old PPAs. Well, I did this with the Padoka PPA. I ran through it, and at the end of it, when you run PPA purge for a PPA, it asks, are you sure you want to do this? And if you do, you have to write, yes, make it so, or something like that. And so I ran that, but it turns out, it was yes, do as I say. And it turns out I didn't pay attention to what it was going to do, and then it ended up uninstalling everything. Like all of my packages. So I watched the terminal and I see some familiar packages like VirtualBox fly by. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not right. What do you mean VirtualBox? And then I look down at Plank, my launcher bar, and I see icons just like going away. And I'm like, no. So here's one of the downsides of owning an SSD. Stuff happens before you can react. So by the time I got Control C to respond, half of my system had been deleted. Yeah, so it was pretty much broken at that point. Luckily, though, two things. Luckily, that wasn't on my laptop, this machine that I'm talking on now. And the second thing is I had a time shift backup, so it was fine. I was able to roll back and nothing horrible. I didn't get left in a horrible broken state.
Yeah, everybody's got an RMRF story.
Yeah, so this is pretty much it, right? And I thought I was immune to RMRF because I would totally read these messages before they ever become a problem, right? Yeah, I didn't. So anyway, yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. I basically RMRF'd my entire distro away. But I ended up reinstalling anyway because I didn't want to go through the trouble of trying to troubleshoot weird driver issues. So I reinstalled everything and added the OIBOF PPA, and everything's working great again. So World of Warcraft went from anytime you change zones or saw new people or anything like that to it stuttering really badly on the Padoka stable driver to the OIBOF running amazingly. I don't see hardly any stuttering anymore. So that version difference, I think I was on 19.1 on the Padoka stable, and then I'm on 19.3 on OIBOF now. So that version jump made a huge difference in performance. So if you're getting bad performance in games, it might be worth looking to a newer driver. Though, if you're going to use the PPA purge, be careful what it's going to delete.
Yeah, I had to implement a rule at work. No one's allowed to use the RMRF command without me having read through it first.
Yes, that's not a bad idea. Fresh eyes and all. The last little bit that I had is I had some Amazon credit. I had like $15 in Amazon credit, and I found a mechanical keyboard for $30. So this is a Velocifier 78. I think it's 78 or 81. It's about the size of a laptop, a small laptop keyboard, but it's full size keys, full height, and everything. But I didn't want the 60% keyboard because they don't have F keys up at the top, but I wanted a really small keyboard. So Velocifier 78 key has, I don't know if it's OutEmu or Otemu, but whatever those are, brown switches. So it's like Cherry, but not quite. They're a little louder than the Cherry Browns. And it's kind of loud.
It sounds like Toyum's keyboard at work.
Yeah,
I've
got a 60% on Cherry MX Clears. I just hold down the
front. How do you like the clears?
I love the tactile bump. It's clicky. It's surprisingly clicky for something that's not supposed to be clicky, but you know, it's a mechanical switch. What you're gonna do? I absolutely love it. This keyboard has been in my backpack or briefcase for years now. And I just plug it into whatever system I need. They're fantastic little things.
Yeah, and one of the biggest reasons that I went with this keyboard was that I didn't need like Corsair or Razer crappy software to control the lights. It's just all on a function key, and you can play around with how it's set up.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was the selling point for me. I was like, $30, and I get to do what I want to with it. Beautiful. So I was pretty happy with that. I'm not positive I like the function key thing. That's what got me away from the 60%, because I liked the F keys, but it turns out that the home, end, and insert keys are also function driven on this keyboard. And I do a lot of file name editing just on the fly, so I use the home key a lot. So I'm having to, I'm at a crossroads now. I'm either going to have to learn how to use the function home key without looking at it, or get used to using the arrow keys. I'm not sure which I'm going to do. We'll see. Anyway, that's it for me. So, Tony, what have you been up to?
I've had an interesting couple of weeks. After the last show, I did the audio editing and got some really nice feedback from the community about how our audio's improved over the last few months. And I've got to say, it was one of the best efforts that I've done. So if there's anyone out there trying to get to grips with audio recording and editing, I'd suggest that you stick with it, because the only way you learn how to do it properly is what you know, by doing it and finding out what works for you and the setup that you have. We do have a production guide that was written by Rob and Isaac, and we've modified it a little bit since we took over the show. But sometimes you have to go with what works on the audio front and the setup you've got. So, yeah, if you're having a go and you're finding it difficult, just stick with it, because eventually it starts falling into place. Also, for the next episode of Distro Hopper's Digest, I've set up my laptop, my test laptop, with OpenSUSE Tumbleweed. I seem to be developing quite a liking for rolling distributions. And I've also developed a liking for the XFCE desktop. I've installed it again on Tumbleweed, and I used it for a month last time with Endeavor OS, and I'm starting to find it's fairly simple, but it does what I need it to do. So and it's a little bit lighter on resources. Not that that's an issue on the particular laptop I've got it on at the moment, but I'm starting to like it. We've had our last meeting at the current Makerspace venue. That was last Saturday. And that mainly involved taking away equipment we wanted to transfer to the new venue, which is my garage. So over the next few weeks, we'll be reconnecting with our Linux roots and advertising the Saturday meetings at the local library as the Linux user group. Because in the old days, that's what we were. We were actually a Linux user group before we became a Makerspace. At some time in the future, we may get the opportunity to play around with a 3D printer at the library. But for now, we're going to try and set up the 3D printers and the laser cutter in my garage. So if anyone needs to use them, they've got access to a space to use them from. But there's a bit of work to do before we get there. I've also been given a couple more PCs. One of them was from Les, who gave me a towel from his recently deceased uncle. He passed away a few weeks ago, and Les passed on his old computer tower, which I'd actually helped him out getting Linux Mint Mate installed on by providing him with a USB stick with the ISO. Well, that's a different story. And then for the wife, as far as computers go, she's been running an old Pentium dual core system for the last 2 or 3 years. And it started to pass its sell-by date. It was still running Mint 17.3 with Windows 7 as a dual boot on a spinning hard drive. And so I've upgraded her to a Dell Optiplex 7010 i5 with 8 gig of RAM and a 240 gig SSD. And she's very impressed with it. Her first comments when she went online and tried to access one of her online games was, "It's fast and it works again." Because one or two of the games had stopped working because Flash had stopped working on 17.3. So she can now use it again. So I've got a happy wife, so life's good there. But on a sad note, I dropped my phone today and the screen's crazed. So,
and that's breaking news, folks.
Ooh.
Yeah. Breaking news.
Oh, breaking Ooh. News. Oh. Yeah, it still works. Everything works. Touchscreen still works and that. But, there is a slight danger that you might cut yourself when you're using it on some of the bits that are sticking up. So I'm going to be picking up a new second-hand phone in the next couple of next tomorrow, actually, from a person who's not very far away. That's about it for me. Josh, what have you got?
Nobody knows who that person is, though.
Nah.
Never heard of them.
Just some altruistic good person.
So, I've gone back to school, so this is kind of like a roundup of the past few hours and yesterday. But we can do it anyway. So, I installed Windows Subsystem for Linux again. I used it back in the day when it first came out. I can't remember if it came out alongside Windows 10. It was around that time anyway. And I played around with it, and it was okay, but it wasn't that good. But it's actually much improved now. And it feels like you're actually just on Linux, and you don't really notice a difference. One of the things back then is that I mainly use Linux for Edgebox development, because doing it on Windows is just a bit of a nightmare. So VS Code, which is the editor I use, because why wouldn't you use it? They have a plugin now which connects to Windows Subsystem for Linux, and you can actually access the folders and edit files in it, which is like super handy. So it's like having a Linux distro inside of Windows. And this makes it quite obvious that I could now just ditch Linux altogether.
Wait a minute, you're going the wrong way with this.
I'm not actually going to ditch it though, just because there's something nice about having a different operating system to use. But definitely it makes it quite obvious the question of, in 10 years' time, will people even be using Linux distros anymore? Or will everyone just use Windows and the more advanced, even better version that Microsoft will bring out in the next 5 years or something of Windows Subsystem for Linux? Who knows? Could this be the end of Linux distros for the workplace? Who knows? It certainly poses that question anyway. But yeah, so I'm going to be trying that out. It probably will have its downfalls, but we can see anyway. I found a new operating system on Twitter called Cloud Ready from a company called Neverware. I think they're UK based, and it turns any PC into a Chromebook. Now you can use Chromium OS, but it's not like as good, because it can be quite difficult to set up. But Cloud Ready is literally, if you want to set it up in a virtual machine, you download a virtual machine file, type in your Google details, once you've literally just opened the file that it downloads in VMware, and you have a working Chrome OS virtual machine. So that's super cool. I'm not sure I really like Chrome OS though, from using it. I guess it's kind of just Chrome with a skin on, made to be an operating system. I don't think I could ever use it.
This right here is how I know that distros won't die, because it looks like Chrome OS is getting its own distro. You've got choices now.
There definitely are choices. But yeah, it's good. The software is really good, but I'm not sure I really like Chrome OS, just because it's too restrictive for what I'd ever need to use. So I'm back to school now. I am in year 11, which is like the final year of high school, which is kind of scary because it feels like 2 minutes ago since I started. And I do my exams next year, which is not exciting. But
I need to ask a question here. You're 15, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and you're saying in your senior year of high school and about to graduate.
So high school is kind of like different here.
Okay.
So you have something called primary school, which is ages 5 to 11 or 12, and then from 11 or 12 to 16, is called high school, and then you've got college for 2 years, and then you got university for however long that takes after that. Yeah.
Actually, that sounds a little bit better than the way we do it here, because we have grade school, which is that 5 to 11 range, and then middle school, which is that 11 to 13, 14 range, and then high school, which is till you're 18. But I think we should be changing our high school to make it so that you have at least an associate's degree by the time you get out of high school.
I don't disagree with that. That sounds good.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't really want to go to university, though. I want to leave school at the end of college. So I returned to school, got exams, so I might be off for a few weeks around then, from the show, but, I will return, because then I have a 13-week holiday before I start college, which is kind of cool. So last time I mentioned that we were exploring print magazines for the magazine that I'm part of, and we actually pushed them live, and if you click on the link in the show notes, you can see pictures of the actual things. I think they look really nice. And we managed to get them at a really good price as well, to sell. And we're actually making profit, and we're not making a loss anymore, because we have had so many orders. It's actually quite surprising, because it kind of gives you like a realistic statistic of where readers are based. And we've only had, out of the many orders we've had, we've only had like 3 UK-based orders.
What?
Which is kind of surprising. Like the rest are like Australia, New Zealand, America. So yeah, that's kind of cool, actually, to know that readers aren't just UK-based.
Is that a number that you're willing or can share?
Yeah, so in the first week, I haven't actually logged in since, but in the first week we got about 25 individual orders. Like, some people ordered like multiple within that, though. So yeah, that's pretty good for us, considering we were expecting to sell one or two in the first week. So yeah, we've managed to get some good profit out of that, which will go towards helping the magazine run, because we don't actually get any money, and that can be hard at times, when you're trying to put a magazine together. So yeah, that should be good, and we're going to do it next time, because it was so popular. So yeah, and obviously the magazine's like £6. Plus shipping, you're talking like $10 if you were in the US. So for people to actually order, we weren't sure like if that was too much, but that's like the cheapest we could do it, because like £6 is what you'd pay in a shop, but obviously you're getting a few more pages than what we offer. So we were like, oh, people probably won't like this, no one will order. But people seem to like the idea. It kind of shows that print magazines aren't dead yet.
That's fantastic.
Because obviously, when you're putting a digital magazine together, you release it, you put it together, and for us it's just like, oh yeah. But you actually not get anything physical at the end of it. So that's kind of still nice, especially for us. So we have an update on the GPU situation. The eBuyer, they tried to refund us, but the credit card had expired. So yeah, they're sorting that out this week. But they got to the conclusion of actually following UK law, after asking them about 10 times for a refund, they finally, offered to do it. So it was GPU shopping time. So I watched a few videos, read a few reviews, and I was going to go with one of the new AMD cards, the RX 5700, because that's slightly better performance and slightly better price than Nvidia. But I had read that the AMD cards, the new ones, had bad drivers, and I really didn't want any more issues after the few months of issues I've had with my previous AMD card. So I looked at what Nvidia had to offer. Now, a 1660 Ti which, like, I don't even know where that gets placed because NVIDIA numbers are just all messed up. I'm not sure where they put that. But I was going to go for that. But then I decided, because someone sent me an Amazon gift card for doing some work for them, I managed to pick up an Asus overclocked NVIDIA RTX 2060, which is like the new line of cards, kind of like the lowest one you can go, I think. I don't think they made a 2050.
Not yet.
No, not yet. Now, it's not the RTX 2060 Super, because that was like £100 extra for like not £100 extra worth of performance. So I decided not to get that. And the graphics card I got for £165 with my Amazon voucher. So actually less than my AMD card, which is like three times worse. And one of the cool things about this card is the fact that it has real-time ray tracing. It's like all the realistic light effects. It's not really been implemented in anything yet. So it's pretty much a gimmick feature.
There's a couple of games where it has been implemented, but I'm wondering, are there drivers for that in Linux?
I've not tried it in Linux, actually. All the demos, the free demos, are they're just Windows-based. So I'd have to try. But I imagine it would work. I've not really looked into. Do NVIDIA release Linux drivers officially? Or are they like...
They used to. I think they still do.
Yeah. Because I read that AMD are better at Linux drivers or something like that. But I'm not sure if that's true anymore.
It's my understanding that NVIDIA have just started putting drivers in the kernel.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I observed is I have two monitors. And with AMD cards, when you have the post screen with like the whatever motherboard logo it is, you know, when Windows is starting up or Linux is starting up, it normally duplicates it on two screens with AMD cards, but with NVIDIA, it just has it on the one screen. So it's as if like it actually detects the card whilst it's booting up, and it actually has the right resolution. So that was kind of interesting. The other cool thing is NVIDIA cards have NVENC, is that how you pronounce it? NVENC encoding. So like, normal streaming uses the CPU mainly, but NVENC uses the GPU's hardware. So like my computer right now is streaming to Mixer, the actual live stream. It's streaming in 2K. Now you can do 4K quite easily, but I decided not to do 4K. Purely because if people have bad internet connection, they will not even be able to load the stream. But it can do 4K, and the fans on the GPU don't even turn on, because it seems to have that much performance. So NVENC encoding is really nice, and that's definitely something that I like about this card. So probably NVIDIA next time I go and get a graphics card, unless AMD improve their stuff. So I think that's it for me. What has Joe been up to?
Well, once again, not much. I've been kind of taking a break from social media, avoiding Facebook, avoiding MeWe. I've even been less active on our Discord, which I probably shouldn't have been. But I've also been taking a break from listening to podcasts. So I'm like 2 weeks behind there. And it made me miss out on some recent news, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. Now, what I have been listening to is one of my coworkers from New York just started the Wheel of Time series, and he's on book two, and we were discussing it, and it made me really want to listen to it again. And it's a really in-depth series, and it's the audiobooks are really very well done. I highly recommend it to anyone. Now, a lot of my friends that I have convinced to read the books, they don't make it all the way through the series. They get to book about three or four and then just decide that it's too slow and too dull. And I just can't understand that. But it's also one of those stories that has to be taken as a whole. But I enjoy it. I highly recommend it to anyone. And recently, I got the Galaxy Note 10 Plus, the 256 gig model, not the 512 and not the 5G model. I don't see the point in getting 5G yet. I still think it costs way too much, but my wife was able to convince me that we both needed this phone because of how long we keep phones as long as they're top-end phones. When we've gotten lower-end phones, they might last 6 months, they might last a year, but, you know, we got the S7 the week it came out, and it served us well until now, really. And I also found something else out, because I use my old phones, you know, even without the SIM card in it, I'm still able to use it as a Wi-Fi phone. And I started removing various services that I had on it. And one of my complaints with it was that I had previously been having to charge it like 3 times a day. And after removing a bunch of the services that were on it and it not trying to access the cellular network, it's been lasting 2 or 3 days at a time. Now, granted, I'm leaving it at work and I'm not turning the screen on much, and it's basically my bridge to the internet over the work Wi-Fi, but it's been lasting days. So it wasn't the phone that was the problem. It was me that was the problem. And I will come up with a more full review for the Note 10 Plus, hopefully. But the things that I want to mention for now is Android Dex is nice. It works very well and easy. I mean, you hook it up to an HDMI display and you get an Android desktop. And I have not had any problems with it other than the fact that audio is not passed over the HDMI, but that might have been the connector I was using. So Netflix looked great. I've set up a couple other things on it just to test it out. But Linux on Dex is not available for the Note 10 Plus, and I don't know if it ever will be, but hopefully soon it will be. And I know that there's a couple other Dex features if you hook it up to a Windows system, which I have not done yet, simply because I almost never have a Windows system up and running unless I'm playing Borderlands 2. But I will test that out. I do want to say the screen looks great on this thing, and the battery lasts a really long time. And the Wi-Fi transfer speeds and the write speeds to the internal memory is incredible. And I transferred 60 gig of data over Wi-Fi to the device very easily using BT Sync, and it did not even get warm. The USB-C dock worked great, as did the display link monitor that I hooked up to it, although Dex does not work over display link. And I want to test Steam Link with Android on Dex and see how that works. And also, I want to see if An Linux will work over the Dex connection. Now, An Linux is just Android on Linux, and it works great, but I put Ubuntu on there, but it's a very, very minimal install of Ubuntu, and it feels a lot more like I would imagine setting up Arch would. I mean, I had to install the desktop environment, I had to install Nautilus, I did install VLC, and I put another user on since you can't use VLC as root, but I still can't get it to launch VLC even with another user installed. I think it has something to do with either group permissions or something else. I even tried running it from command line with -vvv, and I'm not getting any further data on it, but I'll keep plugging away at it and try it. And let's see, I was going to mention, one of the few issues that I have found with the migration to the new phone is a lot of my settings in PodKicker did not migrate, which is my podcatcher app on Android. And all my subscriptions ended up there, but they are not automatically downloading yet, which is one of the reasons I have such a large backlog right now of podcasts. But I think I might have that sorted, and we'll find out the next time a show posts. Also, the other thing I've been working on recently is I had this M.2 adapter to USB 3.0 and a 32 gigabyte drive in it, and it had stopped working because the USB 3.0B connector had come loose and was not working. And so, you know, I busted out the soldering iron and with some downward pressure redid the mounting posts, added a little bit of extra solder, and it's worked great since. Now, I did hear some clicks, like somebody wanted to mention something about the Note 10.
Oh yeah, the DeX stuff that the Samsung phones have, I've just upgraded to Android 10 this week on my Pixel. It's quite nice. And in the original developer kind of previews, they had an option to turn on a desktop mode. So everyone was kind of like getting excited over a system-wide, a platform-wide Android rollout of a desktop mode. But that's not actually being featured in Android 10. And when Google were asked about it, they said that it's not going to come to stock Android, and it was there for developers to test their programs on multi-device, kind of like platforms, and not multi-device, multi-window platforms, because apparently they've never had that feature. And it's open to, manufacturers of other Android phones to kind of develop into their own desktop environment. So maybe we'll see in the future more Android phones having this capability, or even Android will put it in themselves and just build on what they have with this developer thing.
I hope so. I mean, it would be great if there was more development for it in a more myriad environment. And especially with the Linux on Android, the Linux on DeX, because I know it hasn't gotten an update. I think they're still running 16.04 as the approved version of Linux that will run on that. So I hope to see more development and more features in the future. And that's all I got, unless anybody else has any questions.
I think that'll do it. Other than, yeah, I got to wake back up. I've been slacking. All right, well then we'll head on into the news. And the first the first thing that we've got here is about 5150, and I think Joe knows most about
that.
Yeah,
I just found out today that 5150, my fellow podcaster and host on the Linux Lugcast, has passed away. Tony got me that news this morning, and I've been kind of talking to one of the other hosts, Honky Magoo, for the past couple of hours trying to get things sorted out. He was on the Linux Lugcast as a host, and he was an HPR host as well. I really don't know what to say. My condolences to his friends and family. I've really loved doing the Linux Lugcast with him, and I was so happy that I got to meet him at Texas Linux Fest. And I just wanted to mention that the next episode of the Linux Lugcast on the 20th will be a tribute show, and we will be trying to get anybody that knew 50 to jump on the podcast and talk about their experiences with him and give a story about him or whatever else.
Yeah, those are always bad stories to tell overall, I guess. But, yep, condolences to his family. And, Well, on a less of a downer note, we have Linux Mint Monthly News from August 2019. So, this is not going to be a huge, at least not yet, it's not going to be a huge update, but they've got a bunch of high DPI fixes, Coming, there were a bunch of blurry images and system tray icons that it looks like some of the, not legacy yet, but it's going that way, GTK status icon. It was that object's fault, I guess, because it wouldn't render the icons correctly. So the Linux Mint team has been working on XApp status icon to replace a lot of that. And he's got a couple of videos in the Linux Mint Monthly News to kind of illustrate why and how that works. He's got just showing you how to do it with GTK status icon and then showing you how to do it with XApp status icon. It seems like a very simple switch if you're going from one to the other. And GTK status icon gives you a blurry icon in the taskbar if you're on high DPI. And XApp cleans that right up. So what I think was funny about that is I don't think he meant to do this, but I think Clem inadvertently made how to program Linux Mint with Python 3 video. Because he goes in and through, I think he's using Sublime, through Sublime Text kind of just starts from scratch, from an empty page, and shows you how to make a little pop-up that says something and has a tray icon and has a tooltip icon. And it really just gets the basic platform of an application there ready for you. So he's inspired me. I don't know. I'm not a programmer at all, but it has kind of given me enough, and I'd say basic knowledge to at least break something.
Can you drop the link, the direct link to the video?
Yeah, it's in the blog, and I'll go grab the link and add that to the show notes as well. It is really, really good. For sure. And then they're fixing some update manager shield icon issues. This is also related to GTK status icon, but on the first login, sometimes you can see the shield is either missing altogether or it's like too big and cropped or just weird looking. So they're looking into fixing that as well. And then last up is the Mintbox 3. So they've got themselves a new diamond-cut aluminum logo to the back of these boxes. And you can see that picture in the Linux Mint Monthly News as well. So it looks pretty nice. That new logo is making its rounds. The next article up is XFAT. I use it a lot. And now Microsoft wants to bring it to the Linux kernel. Ooh-hoo-hoo. What do you guys think about this?
Well, it is already available. You can get the XFAT daemons in the repos already. I've installed it a couple of times for formatting SD cards and things.
Yeah, I use XFAT pretty much all the time because I never know what kind of device I'm going to be walking up to, especially when people have issues. So if I want them to get a specific file that I've got, I mean, it's got to be an XFAT. It's the only thing that's supported on all of the devices with minimal effort and supports large file sizes. Because I guess FAT32 was kind of it before.
Yeah, it's just going to save you the time of having to manually install the little apps that enable you to format as XFAT rather than just FAT32.
But it's nice having the option of a different file system, because if you want to plug a flash drive into your Windows machine or your Mac machine or your Linux machine or your BSD machine, really, it's not easy to find a single file system that does all these things unless you're talking about FAT.
Yeah, and I think the issue was that so many camera manufacturers use SD cards now, and by default, they use the XFAT system for reading those cards. So it has become an issue if you're using Linux rather than Windows, because you can't read the files off a SD card that's been formatted that way unless you know how to install the drivers yourself. So that's why they're going to put it in the kernel by default, I think.
Yeah, I think overall this is going to be a good thing, but I can definitely see how some people would see the value of this is negative. But overall, really good. I'm glad. I'm definitely glad.
I think you got to try to find the value of this being negative. I mean, I get Microsoft and open source and embrace extend extinguish and whatever, but open standards are good. Open ways of doing things are generally good, and I like plugging things into multiple computers, and I want to be able to do it more.
Exactly. Yep, I take that pragmatic stance as well. It's just, it just needs to work, and if XFAT's going to be the way that we do that, then all right, I think I'll be okay with it as long as Microsoft behaves.
Next up, in my wish list is an encrypted file system that works on the major ones, because you can't on any of them. It's very annoying. And that's not a problem I'm able to solve, but I hope somebody does.
Yeah, definitely. That would be really awesome, because I think the issue with that is people won't use it until it's easy like that.
I've got disks I can only ever read on Linux because I'm using Lux, and Lux is only available on Linux, and OpenBSD has its own thing, and macOS I believe has its own thing as well, and Windows probably has its own thing, or BitLocker does it for them, or I don't know. But there's so much variety and not enough getting along, and having an open standard, that's pretty cool. You know, it's like
I definitely agree with
it's
that.
It's like IBM making the power spec open and letting anybody build their own cores. The more people who are able to just build things based on things that other people have already worked on and make things compatible, that's a good thing in my book, no matter what happens, no matter who's doing it.
Yep, exactly. Just make it easy. Just make it easy, and I think we'll all benefit from it. Next up, we have the PineBook Pro has opened up pre-orders. I don't know, for $200, I feel like this is something I should probably snap up. It looks like it's coming with a 64-bit dual-core ARM 1.8 gigahertz Cortex A72. That's a mouthful. And a quad-core ARM 1.4 gigahertz Cortex A53.
Isn't A53 still not quite out of order, so you'll still have a slower performance than most things, but it's a good cheap core, and it works on all their other PineBook products, so that's good.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it will really just depend on what it is that you're doing. Interesting. And then the GPU is quad-core Mali-T860, get 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of flash storage, and wireless Wi-Fi AC and Bluetooth 5.0. So pretty decent for a $200 laptop. Anybody plan on picking one of these up?
I've already got a PineBook. not a PineBook Pro, but a PineBook, and I can see the value after a couple of reviews are in of getting a cheap laptop that can be flown out of the country and wiped and played with, and that's useful.
Absolutely. How do you like your PineBook?
It's all right. I can tell it's a $100 laptop, but it's a $100 laptop. I mean,
what do you expect, right? Yeah,
it came with a dead pixel, but one dead pixel versus a machine that works where I put it and charges over USB. And yeah, it works.
Yeah, they are warning people that buy these if they come with two or three dead pixels. That's just going to be the way it is. You know, I think the before you can ask for a refund, I think you've got to have about 7 or 8 dead pixels on the screen.
Which makes sense. If they're trying to keep their costs really low, they're not throwing away any screens that come off the line.
No. The other thing, it'd be interesting to see what the UK price comes out at, and whether they're actually available or whether you've got to order them from the States.
Aren't they shipping from China anyway?
I'm not sure how it's going as far as that. I thought they were being manufactured in the States, but maybe I'm wrong.
So the other PineBook products are stamped with the designed in Silicon Valley, manufactured in Silicon Delta, China. So I don't know if the PineBook Pro is any different, but the other PineBook line, I've got one of the Pine 64s and the PineBook, and they both are stamped the same.
Oh.
Right. Well, it'd be interesting, very interesting to see what the price range is when it comes to the UK then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck there.
And next up, we have Apple gives third-party repair shops access to authorized parts. I guess I'm probably the only one on the show that this would actually affect, but yeah, I think this is a good thing, right? I mean, getting all these people that were forbidden from working on iPhones, the access to the parts and the ability to make actual good repairs on an iPhone. That's really cool.
I mean, I do own Apple products.
Oh, okay. So, Yeah, so this is going to affect you as well.
Yeah, I think it should have happened a long time ago.
I very much agree with that. I'm looking at my phone now, and I think it's like at 81% of battery longevity, life, whatever you call that, where it just wears out. It's at 80-something percent wear. And once it gets down to about, I don't know, 70 or 60, it's probably going to start making me really mad. So having, just being able to go to someone you trust so they can fix those things is really actually pretty good. And another quick Apple story, because this affected, sort of, it affected someone that had written into the show. I didn't go back and find out who it was, but it looks like Apple Music is coming to the web now. So if you pay for the subscription service, that means that you can listen to all of this stuff on Linux too. I don't think it's exactly the issue that the user or the listener wrote in about. I think it was about moving music to an older iPod, I think is what it was. But it's kind of still in the same realm, and this might be a sideways solution for you, just in case you're looking for something like that. And next up, Google says malicious websites have been quietly hacking iPhones for years. Who put this one in there?
Yeah, I did. And then, well, I put it in the other week, and then a an article came out about a week later than this one did, saying that the bug also affects Android devices. So Google were just trying to blame Apple for something that affects their own stuff as well.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, huh. Point one finger towards someone and three more point back at you, huh?
Yeah, I haven't really read into it that much, but it just looks like a website that people were visiting were installing some exploit software. And apparently, if you rebooted the phone, then it would fix it or something like that. But yeah, apparently it's fixed.
Yeah, if you actually installed the update, because I know you can defer those updates for, like, ever, unless you have the automatic update turned on. But I do on the phone, and it never automatically updates. I have to go in and manually do it. So, if you have an iPhone, look, just check. Make sure you're updated. And a couple other attacks on Android phones. There was Joker spyware found in 24 Google Play apps that have already been taken down off of the store, which means that they're probably uninstalled from your device as well. And then there's FunkyBot malware intercepts Android text and two-factor authentication codes. And this was more software that if you installed a compromised app, it was able to listen to your texts and pull information out of your text. And if those are two-factor codes or just general information in your SMS, then it could scrape that information out. So, long story short, be careful what you're installing. There was another app, I think it was, another set of apps. I think it was mostly confined to Brazil, but if you installed a WhatsApp lookalike app, it was able to do similar things. So, pretty much do anything they wanted to on your phone or read stuff from your phone. So, yeah, just, you know, do your due diligence, right? I mean, don't just run random things on your phones is the is the lesson to be learned out of all of
or
this.
Or don't trust your phones.
There you go. That's another good one. Don't trust your phone. That's getting into my tinfoil hat area, and I try not to trust anything, but it's hard, right? I'm running a Lenovo laptop. I'm running an iPhone. I'm running all kinds of hardware that I probably shouldn't be trusting.
Yeah.
And that's it for the news. So we'll head on into the security update. I thought we were kind of already there, huh? And our security update, the exploit stuff on the phones was kind of a downer. So I wanted to do more of an uplifting story. Firefox is still amazing. Yeah, it's been amazing since Quantum. What was that? Version 60-something or another? And they've just been getting better and better and better and better every single iteration. And Firefox 69 specifically because they started doing tracker blocking and cryptominer blocking by default. It was already in the system if you went into the settings and turned it on for yourself. But by default, new installs will now turn on this the standard tracking profile blocking by default, which means that ads and the trackers that are associated with them are going to be turned off. So that means that you'll be a little bit safer on the web. and away from more prying eyes.
It's a good contrast to Chrome's movement in the opposite direction of, if you're a third-party ad blocker, we don't want you. Go for Firefox, yeah.
That was kind of the moral of this story that I kind of really wanted to get across. What's installed by default in a lot of Linux distributions, in my opinion, is the right choice for a browser. And it looks like they're blocking crypto miners in that same standard profile. So if you go onto a website that wants you to mine for them, Firefox is going to prevent that from happening. It looks like, I think this is available in some other browsers as well, but autoplay videos, not anymore. You can turn them completely off. You can just make them silent if you want, or you can allow them. Ooh, by the way, Tony, I know you had mentioned that your wife is doing some flash this or that. If she's using Firefox, it's going to block that from automatically running. You have to, there is no always activate button anymore. You're going to have to turn it on each time you come across it, which isn't really a big deal as long as she trusts those flash apps, but you never know.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll wait for the cry and say, when she says, "My game won't work."
See, you what know it's coming.
Yeah.
Better start finding a non-flash alternative. Flash is dying. It's been dying for years. You know what? It might kick around for another couple of years, but I hope not.
There'll always be that archive with all these Flash games. I think Newgrounds is actually looking to convert all of their Flash stuff to something more modern so that it doesn't have to jump through so many hoops to get stuff done.
Cool.
That would be a really... Because I grew up in Newgrounds. I grew up with that. And a lot of other internet stuff, and I'd be happy to see if that just continued to stay around forever.
It'd be nice to not have so much code just gone, you know, having it kept around in some form that people can actually use, as opposed to if Flash is actually just completely dead forever, and nobody. Well, good riddance Flash, but then again, a lot of stuff is written in Flash, and it would be nice to keep that stuff around.
Absolutely. I don't think the hacker community would let Flash die fully. I figure we'll end up with something like DOSBox. We'll have a Flashbox. And the last couple of tidbits on this is that, don't forget, Firefox runs on everything, not just Linux. So for those of you that are running fully Linux, I mean, you get your Firefox right then and there. But for everybody else, Windows, Android, macOS, iOS, go get yourself some Firefox, because it's not just Linux that is getting these standard profiles by default, these blocking profiles. Everything gets it. Every device that's running Firefox 69 will block these things by default. So go grab it. Try it out. If you haven't tried Firefox in a while, I really, really need you to go give it another spin. It was pretty bad. I will agree. I'm a bit of a fanboy, though, so I stuck with it. But it's much better now. I would say that it would it rivals Chrome in just about everything that it does.
Yeah, another vote. If you haven't tried Firefox since Firefox 57, you should definitely give it another spin. It still leaks memory on my system, but my system has about 400 tabs open on a regular basis, and
wow.
And I've got 8 gigs of RAM on my desktop. You know what? It functions.
There you go. I don't come close to that. Maybe I've got a dozen or so I haven't seen these memory leaks. Or if I have, they've been pretty minimal.
My system's also wow. been up for 67 days. So, you know, it's not exactly like I'm restarting Firefox every couple of days. No. It's up for weeks at a time.
And last little bit is the new logo. It's coming next version. So if you hate flat logos, yeah, here's a pre-apology for you. It's going to be flat. I like the new logo look. So hopefully that doesn't put too many people off. And that's it for our security update. And before we go, I wanted to let Toyam give some information about himself and where you can find him and how to get a hold of him and berate him and all that kind of fun stuff, right? Toyam, where can we get you?
Absolutely. So I'm always on IRC. I've got it's the first machine I turn on after a power outage is my IRC box. Sometimes before my router. You can find me on Void Linux on Freenode. That's pound Void Linux, VOID LINUX. You can also
find out more about the distribution from voidlinux.org, which is do hover your mouse over the logo, just because that's voidlinux.org, voidlinux.org. And I'm Valetern on Freenode. You can find me VAEL and tab, and you'll get the rest of my name. So voidlinux on Freenode, you pop in and ask any questions. We welcome people of all stripes, including people who don't use Void.
It spins.
It spins.
You said it, and I had to go do it. I just had to go do it. That's so awesome. And Joe, where can we get more of you?
Well, I am on a couple of other podcasts. You can find me at www.tllts.org. That's the Linux Link Tech Show. I'm also on the Linux Lugcast, which is www.linuxlugcast.com. And speaking of which, if you want to be a part of the show on the 20th, the memorial for 5150, send me a message at jb@mintcast.org, and we will get it all figured out. Also, you can find me on MeWe. I just want everybody to know the Linux Lugcast will be continuing. We're just going to have to kind of figure things out as we go. Maybe get Danny Meeks more involved.
And it looks like Bo's not here this time, but you can find him at the Undercast Network. Moss is also out. You can find him at Triad Bardic College, Peaceful Hippo, MeWe. His music is on Bandcamp and all over YouTube. And you can get him at moss@mincast.org or distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com. And Tony Hughes, more of you.
Yeah, you can find me on Hacker Public Radio. I've got quite a number of episodes up there. I'm host ID 338. I do an occasional blog on https://tony-hughes@blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter, TonyH1212, and you can get me at distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com and also th@mintcast.org.
And Tony Watts isn't here either, so tw@mintcast.org, or you can find his band Echoes of Savages around. And Josh, more you.
Yeah, josh@edgeblocks.org, edgeblocks.org, and all about Conan on Twitter.
Ooh. And for me, leochavez.org and at Leo Chavez on Twitter. And you can get your 5-minute news digest at Full Circle Weekly News. We're, I don't know, going through some weirdness right now, but they'll be coming back out here pretty quick. And I promise I'll get that blog post on leochavez.org done soon, I promise. But before we leave, we want to make sure to acknowledge some of the people who make Mintcast possible. A special thanks to Toyam Cox for being a good sport and answering all of our questions. Josh for all of his work on the website and the live stream. Bite Mark Hosting for hosting Mintcast.org and our Mumble server. Archive.org for hosting our audio files. And of course, the Linux Mint development team for the fine distro we love to talk about. Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
This has been another episode of the Mintcast podcast. The show notes for this episode are at mintcast.org. You can send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. You can find more information about Linux Mint at www.linuxmint.com. You can follow both Mintcast and Linux Mint on Twitter, @mintcast and @linux_mint. Thanks to Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com for our theme music. And thanks for listening to this episode of the Mintcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to admit this on the show, but I had to look up what yak shaving was.